Got it. All righty. Here we go. Let's get Tom in here because we have got a boatload. Boatload. We got to get to.
Hi, John. Are you the new harmless fuzzball?
No, that would be Todd Herman, Tom. Talk about the loss. Rush Limbaugh passing away, age of 90. And the
90, 70.
I mean, 70. 70.
Yeah.
The people that have the Love Doesn't Live Here signs in their yard, they're the first to send out mean, horrible tweets about him. Diamond in the air! Woo! I jumped back in the little creek that heads to the Yakima today, and it was delightful. I have a new technique, and I think it's going to work much better for me.
Has the ice given up the fight?
The ice is not there anymore, Tom.
All right.
The ice went away, but it's coming back again. The ice is coming back again. But rather than just going in and throwing my, you know, diving in, put my head under the water, I sort of lounge around. It works a lot better. So
you let your body heat melt the ice.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I got a bunch of stories, and it does, it helps. And I just... My mental health break. Jumping in the Yakima River. All right, Hannah steps in. Unfortunately, this is a story that we seem to do all the time with you. You give us the details. This is another police shooting in the city of Seattle. Were we with you just last week talking about something very similar to this, right?
Right. This shooting that happened last night down by the Seattle waterfront came, it was just a week and a day, or no, a week to the day, actually, of the shooting that where the man was killed after he killed the young woman last week. So here's what we know about the shooting is that it started just before 9:30 when the Port of Seattle police called the SPD.
About a man in crisis armed with a kitchen knife at Alaskan Way and Seneca Street. Officers arrived. The man, who had reportedly cut himself, fled down Alaskan Way. Police approached the man and attempted to use a less lethal tool, but the device was ineffective. The man moved toward officers who fired, fatally striking the man. The involved officers will be placed on paid administrative leave in accordance with SPD policy while the investigation is ongoing. And per policy, the department will be releasing video of the incident within 72 hours.
Now, there hasn't been any other details released today. There was some questions that they did that press conference at the scene last night, and there was some questions. Some reporters had heard from witnesses who said that the guy had his hands up and was backing away when this happened. Then you had other questions about, did you find the knife? Do we know where the knife is? And there was really no clear answer on that yet, but it was very early in the investigation, so she can only say so much. We'll have to wait and see. So the next thing to come out is going to be the video, which will clearly show one way or the other exactly how this went down. I can tell you, I watched this go down in real time on social media, and the protester groups were all over it. They monitor the scanners, and they were chatting about the possibility that this guy was suicidal and that the police didn't de-escalate. And they were out there at the scene last night heckling as the SPD spoke to media, and then also did a vigil at the West Precinct last night. And now they look to be coming out in force again tonight.
Of course.
Yeah.
I assume they have all the facts on their side.
Doesn't matter.
Facts don't matter. By the way, we need the color of everybody. Isn't that important? What color was the officer? Do we know that?
I do not know the color of the officers, but I do know the color of the person who was shot, which was a white man.
Oh, okay. Well, then this is going to go away in about 6 minutes. Anything else to the story?
Yeah, I've got a couple of quick questions.
Go ahead, Tom.
So, first off, I'm happy to hear that they apparently were wearing body cams or something, because so many of these incidents, there's nothing to look at, but they were wearing their own cameras.
They have either a body camera or dash cam, because that's the video has to be released within the 72 hours. Yeah.
So I applaud the Seattle Police Department for not only doing that, but also releasing this information as quickly as they did. However, the one thing that slightly irritates me is just that they say they attempted to use less lethal methods, but their attempt was ineffective. Why don't they just say, well, I mean, was it a taser? Did they try to tase the person? Why? I don't understand why they're being so hedging their bets by saying it was ineffective and not describing what less lethal method they used. Is there a political or a legal reason for that vagueness?
I think the less you say at the beginning, the better is the mentality. Just, you know, they hand this investigation over to the Force Investigation Board. They're the ones who are supposed to release the official information. And you never know. Look, in the shooting that happened last week, the police came out right away that night at the scene, and they said that the three people involved knew one another. That was not the case.
No,
it was
wrong.
Random.
Yeah.
And it really, really crushed the family of the victim, the woman who was killed, that was out there. So, you know, I think they're just careful.
Gotcha.
Here's the way it works with cops. If somebody's got a knife and you are a solo police officer, you don't use less lethal. But if you have a backup, there's two guys. One guy will go lethal. The other guy has less lethal. So before you approach, the two cops then make the decision, I'll take lethal, I'll take taser, or whatever. They basically work it out ahead of time. That's often what happens if you're going on a domestic call. I actually experienced this right before we went upstairs to the guy's apartment. We were in the elevator heading up, and they looked at each other, and they say, I'll take lethal. I'll do taser. I got dog, or whatever else was there. In this case, if it's one officer against one guy with a knife, you don't do less lethal because you don't want to get into a boxing match or a wrestling match with somebody who has a knife. If they're approaching you, and if they're in, I think it's in 15-foot distance or something like that, you can then discharge your weapon because at that point they're within range and they can move. The time it takes you to move the gun out of your holster, to move it up and then to a shooting position and to aim is, I think, 2 seconds. And they say within that time, the person can move 15 feet. So they got it all worked out. If this is the case and it's one single officer and the
guy has two officers, John.
Two officers, both shot, both fired.
Right.
And I'll tell you, this is the discussion right now, right? There's a bill in Olympia that would make everything you just said as far as what they do in their process when this kind of a thing happens out the window. It would require mandate that that lethal force is the absolute last thing that you do. Require all new training, and you would not be able to kill a person in mental crisis unless you absolutely positively had to, and this would probably not amount to that under this bill that's going through Olympia right now. And that's what you're going to see from the critics. That's what I'm hearing from the protesters. I guarantee you that's what you're going to hear from all of the people talking about defunding the police and things like that, who say this is just another person in crisis who got killed by the cops.
Okay. So you can run into a situation where the person, let's assume mentally deranged, and we could take the example from a couple of years ago. The guy was out near REI. Remember this story, Tom? Remember this, Hannah? He had like a pickaxe with him or something, and
he's
walking down this, swinging that thing everywhere. So you have an individual that could easily just plunge it into somebody's neck or back or whatever, and the cop followed him and kept telling him, drop it, drop it, drop it. Remember the cop following behind him the whole time? So here's a cop. Here's a guy that's got a butcher's knife. He's, I think, hit one other person with it. Now, what are they to do? If he has it and they're coming and it's less lethal, should they run away? Should they have a dog? Should they shoot him with some sort of net? I mean, what are you to hit him with if he can turn around and stab somebody else? This is
That'll
the
be
case.
Worked out in rules
right.
if that bill
right.
passes. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, listen, I assume the protesters won't be out long. I believe the guy that was shot by the police is white, and I think the police officers were white. So
are the protesters for the most part these days. So
most of those protesters are white. They don't have anything else to do. All right. Anything else on it, Hannah?
Well, yeah,
not on that, but I have a whole other story for you on police shootings. So this came down yesterday, and this – you remember back in 2017, Charlene Lyles, a pregnant mother of four, was shot and killed by Seattle police. And there was a lawsuit filed, wrongful death lawsuit filed on behalf of her four children, on her behalf of her estate. And way back in January 2019, a King County judge agreed and dismissed that case. But yesterday.
So 2 years later, we now received ruling by the Court of Appeals reversing the decision to dismiss the case, which means that now it gets sent back and hopefully will go to a trial.
So that's Karen Kohler. She is the lawyer for the Charlene Lyles estate. Here's why she said the court made its decision.
When you dismiss a case, that means that you're not entitled to a trial because the law says that there's nothing that you could possibly do to prove your case. And you're not supposed to dismiss a case if there are what's called facts that are in dispute. So the court agreed with the city officers and saying, well, there's no way that this case could ever be won, so it should be dismissed. And the Court of Appeals pointed out numbers of factual discrepancies that exist.
So the court reversed the decision based on two important things. First,
the city said, well, it can't be held to a regular negligence standard like you and me. And the court said, well, yes, you have to be reasonable in your actions and you don't get special treatment because you're a Seattle police officer. You have to still have reasonable actions in your care towards other people. So one of these issues was the taser. The first thing that happened was the experienced officer yelled to the inexperienced officer, use your taser. But the inexperienced officer had broken policy and was not carrying his taser. The older officer assumed he had a taser and told him to use it. He did not because he didn't have it in violation of policy. The court's allowing that to be heard as a question of was that reasonable or wasn't that reasonable?
The other issue has to do with immunity that cops get, specifically in this case, immunity that bars a person or their estate from suing if the person injured or killed was in the midst of committing a felony.
They want to say that she could form the intent to just commit murder, that her actions were intentional. She was committing a felony when she changed from being the person who called for help to a person who was threatening them. And the court said, well, you can make that argument, police officers, but the Charlena's estate can also talk about the fact that she was not of sound mind. She was going through a psychotic incident of some sort. Behavior was so erratic, not because of intent, but because she was having mental health crises.
And there were three expert witnesses for the Charlena Lyles estate that were not allowed based on that lower court's decision. And the appeals court said, no, you should let them be there. So the next move is up to the city and the officers. Kohler expects
they're going to probably appeal it to the Supreme Court. We imagine that. There's been a number of cases that have come down where the courts have looked at how, I mean, to put it lightly, how the police department and police officers typically get out of these kind of cases and are not letting these legal loopholes rule the day.
I've reached out to the city to see what their plans are, and I've not heard back yet.
Is it a civil or criminal? What are they
doing? It's a civil suit. Civil suit. Yeah.
Okay. So civil suit, a preponderance of evidence. You need 51% to get to it. Often it's easier to win on these than it is with criminal.
Sure.
And I'll say she wasn't even sure necessarily that they would win this, but she was pleased with is that the family wants to stay in court. They've been denied that. The inquest in the Charlena Lyles case has just been a mess, never happened, and the family has been wanting that for a long time. So the hope is to at least get the day in court, whether that be back at the lower court or the state Supreme Court.
Huh. Yeah, I think that's important to point out that the judgment today or yesterday was just to allow the case to be brought to a jury. The judges, the appeal court judges were saying, we think this is something for a jury to decide. Doesn't mean that Charlena Lyles will win the case. It just means that she will be able to bring her case unless it's again overturned by the Supreme Court decision.
Right, and there's disputed facts in the case that's part of the issue. Look, this is going to be interesting, depending on when the timing comes down. There's a lot of pressure on this type of stuff right now, and laws are changing or about to change. It'll be interesting to see this play out in court.
Yep.
Well, you can't change the law, right? And on these officers,
no.
The actions taken on that day are the actions taken on that day. I didn't realize that that it's against policy for the officer not to have the taser. He went to use the taser. He was going to get it out of his locker, but he'd noticed that the battery was dead on the thing. So he went out under the streets without the taser, and I don't think the other guy had his, right? Is that the problem was? And that is that policy that you always have to walk out the door with your taser?
I believe that is what the policy was. I'd say I'm like 90% sure. That is what the lawyer said. And I believe only one of them had a taser because that was the more experienced cop, she said, had ordered the newer cop to use the taser. And I believe she said she thought he had, but he didn't have the taser, and that, you know, led to all of the issue.
Got it. Okay. All right. Unfortunately, another busy day for you, Hannah. Will you be out there covering the protests if they're occurring this evening?
I do not think I will be out this evening. I'll be monitoring, though, like I do.
Okay, let me ask you one quickie. Why in the Seattle Times or why in the police report. Why was the name redacted of the person with the hammer that smashed all the windows in front of Nordstrom on Sunday?
That I don't know. I have not been following that closely, but I will definitely look into that because that's odd. That's
odd. They were peacefully smashing windows. The person with a hammer smashed all the windows in Nordstrom and the front door of the Nordstrom building. And each one of the windows, did you see this, Tom, cost anywhere between $50,000 and $70,000?
Yeah.
Because there was supposed to be these glass that was designed somehow to not shatter or not whatever. But now I assume they all need to be removed. But point taken. Good job, whoever did that. You really showed everybody that whatever the purpose was. Good job.
It might be because that person is underage. Does it have an age in there?
Oh,
I didn't see.
Okay.
I don't know. I'll look into it. I'll get back to you.
All right, that's all right.
Thanks,
all right,
Anna.
Thanks,
Anna.
Thanks, guys.
Get you out of here. Hang on. Let me get guys. Watch as that person that listens to the show can't stand that song. We still have so much stuff to clean up with our songs. The other person that absolutely goes back into like a PTSD effect whenever Rachel Bell comes on, Tom, because of that Billy Joel song. We've invited that individual. By the way, if you're listening, you sang it in the high school talent show, and it didn't go well. And every time Rachel comes on and you hear that song, it takes you back. We want you to come in, and we want you to sing it on the air. And we will all go crazy, and everybody will love you, or we'll have some concert somewhere that you can do it. And it could then be completed in your life so that you don't have this emotional hole still hanging out there in your heart.
That's right.
I think that's the best thing to do, don't you think?
We won't even charge you a therapy fee either.
No. Or I know the guy that books Billy Joel. And if we could come up with $2.5 million, Billy Joel would fly here. And you could sing it with Billy. Again, these are all options. Right now, I'm just spitballing ideas. Work on that, would you, there, Jacob? Let's check in with Tracy Taylor on a look. All righty, Keel Mortgage, 1-888-778. We're organizing a field trip. This is where Sean and I come to your house and dial the number for you and stand there and listen to you. Just you won't hear the other side. Find out how much money you're going to save by calling Keel Mortgage to find out if you want to refinance that house right now. Take advantage of historically low mortgage rates and Sean dialing the phone. I'll be waiting in the car. 1-888-778-KIEL. That's Keel Mortgage, the one to call. Laura Keel and everybody else there at Keel Mortgage desperately wanting to help you.
Is it a rotary phone, John?
Could be rotary. Then if it is, let your 1-888-778-KIEL. Yes. Yes. I think it might be rotary. Or it could be a princess touch tone. The important thing is I'm waiting in the car. All right. Let's see. Did the pandemic stop? Remember that? That's the old Mutual of Omaha. I'll wait here while Jim goes ahead to wrestle the alligator.
Yep.
Marlon Perkins, right? All right.
We're dating ourselves.
Well, who else would date us? Did the pandemic solve one of the sport's weirdest mysteries? This involving, of course, the power of the home field advantage. Do we now know?
This is 8 pages of nonsense.
I know.
Oh my God. About once a week, maybe to be charitable, once a month, Jacob comes across these lengthy articles, and usually they pay off. This one is so frustrating. Each page, they go through.
And I'm like, because normally you sort of are catapulted into the next page. Like, I see. They're building the argument. Like, okay. And I'm like slipping and sliding all over in this thing. And I'm like 5 pages in. I'm like, crap, I hope Tom finished this
done. So what they're doing is...
you suck, Jacob. You owe me 35 minutes of my life.
I tried to warn you that you only had to read half.
So let me try to summarize this relatively quickly. They figured that this would be a good a season because of the pandemic, the COVID that shut down fans in stadiums. Is there something to the home field advantage or not? And they go through all these different fields. So they first off, it says, so there seems to be a clear home field advantage in general. Is it because of the frenzied crowds, the cheering? You know, the Seahawks are so proud of themselves for being so loud. The 12s are and all that. And the answer to frenzied crowds is maybe, but maybe not. So then they do another theory.
Reading.
Their rule book advantages. For instance, in baseball, the home team is always at bat last. And apparently in hockey, I don't understand hockey well enough, but you get to put your stick down in a face-off second or something. And so that is somehow preferable. And they say, so could that explain home field advantage? Well, maybe, but you know, maybe not. So
Tom,
maybe.
Stop. I swear. I'm even madder hearing you come back with it.
Okay, well, the answer is the same to all these. How about the travel? Is it because people have to travel so far, and then you could just look at the teams like the NBA that play in a bubble? Well, yeah, maybe, maybe not. Environmental comfort. It's nice to sleep in your own bed or not. Yeah. Officiating bias. Yeah, maybe not. Maybe it's like it is the most.
Golly.
I mean,
all
I
right,
guess.
I'm moving on. I'm moving
yes,
on.
Please do.
I found a much better story, and you will love this. This is from Forbes. Okay. You ready?
Yeah.
This guy teaches a communication class at Rutgers. And so for the last like 15 years, he said, how many of you, as a freshman, will be what? Would sit and watch a three-hour event. So that would be Oscars, Super Bowl, baseball. He said every year the number of hands dwindle. And then he says, those of you that don't have your hands in the air, why? And they say, that's a long time. That's a lot of time.
Attention
spans. Not only attention span, but just the value of time and to think that I'm going to sit and watch this thing. So the question is, what's happening to sports? Because sports have been down everywhere. It's not just the politicalization of sports. Mm-hmm. Every single one of the sports have come down. It's not just also the cutting of the cable. They have found that people have fallen from schedule. Used to be a schedule in life in 2017, 18, 19 that you scheduled, got up in the morning, got in the car, went to work, got back in the car at the same time, listened to Tracy Taylor, came home, sat down, had dinner, same time, and then watched. But you've broken away from your scheduling of your normal life, and now time is far more flexible. And when you watch and what you watch and everything, that's why Netflix takes off, because Netflix, in effect, allows you to be as flexible as you want, and you can watch whenever you want. Sports happening at a particular time makes it far more difficult in a non-scheduled life to fit the flexibility of a flexible life in a scheduled event doesn't work. That also, with the fact that kids are playing less sports, that's going to happen as well. They said overall the number of people watching sports and the Super Bowl and the NBA and NHL and all that other stuff will continue to come down because the kids nowadays coming up, which will be the biggest part of the generation, don't care about sports.
That is interesting because what you're saying is appointment viewing doesn't exist anymore. I mean, in a few rare occasions, but we're not all home. It's, you know, Tuesday night at 8 o'clock to watch whatever, like people used to do in the 50s, 60s and 70s, or like, you know, when Seinfeld was on, you know, every Thursday night. That makes a lot of sense. And the reason sports is taking the biggest hit is because that's the one thing that once it happens, it's dated. Nope. How many people are interested in watching the Super Bowl 3 days later? Now, the great thing about Netflix or some, you know, an entertainment proposition is, well, you can watch the movie on Saturday or on Tuesday or, you know, Sunday morning if you wanted to, whereas nobody wants to watch an old sporting event, you know, unless they're doing some kind of historical study. So I guess that makes sense. Sports was going to be the last bastion of appointment TV, and I still think it is. Still more people watch the Super Bowl than not, but in this particular case, it's fewer and fewer. And that might be because, we no longer live by the kind of 8-to-5 lifestyle clock that we used to. That's an interesting point.
Even less because of the lockdowns in 2020. There was far more flexibility, and they were able to see that when people, I think it was September 23rd, they looked at the number of people that were telecommuting was astronomical, the biggest they'd ever seen at this one particular day. And then at the same time, there was some sort of sporting event that was occurring, and nobody seemed to care. And then they remember the Ravens game was supposed to take place on Thanksgiving, and then they have to shift it to Wednesday.
Yeah.
And
yes,
people are like, what? This doesn't fit. Doesn't fit my life. I think more importantly, I think it's really interesting that kids coming up don't care about sports. They're not physically active. So if you don't play sports, then you can't sit there and go, oh, when I played, oh, but I could have made that pass.
Isn't your son, you know, is that the proof?
My son is an anomaly.
He is, huh? Okay. So you think, I mean, because I've got a nephew, Stevie, who plays soccer, and he plays football, and he plays basketball, does track, and he loves, I mean, he watches the NBA games.
How old is he?
He is 10.
Oh, wow. Well, he's outside the norm. Rye's 19 or 18. But so Rye, it's a group, it's like that kid. It's that 10-year-old. I think that's the group that is less physically active. That's the group that plays less sports. They're less involved in things. They don't sign up. Concussions and parents are concerned. Baseball takes way too much time, and the field is too big, and the kids can't play. Huh, how about that? Well, your kid is is that your nephew that's 10 years old that still likes sports, huh?
Yes, absolutely. Stevie. Well, he might be 11 by now.
Okay. 11 by mean by the time we started talking about this segment?
Well, the key is... Yeah, go ahead.
Shame on you.
We didn't even get to the good article he suggested. The guy says that sports just don't mean the same without fans. And to that, I say poppycock. I think my experience of the Seahawks was no different this year, even though there were no fans in the stands, because most of us don't go to the games. And it's just, the NFL was just as exciting to me this season as it was in the years past. But
I used to love watching sports. And then you watch the fan that, like, oh, my God. When the 76ers lost to the Houston Rockets in the playoffs, and I saw those Houston fans in the stands screaming and yelling and cheering as my Sixers were heading into the back of the locker room, and I picked up the phone and dialed information for the area code in Houston. And
I remember.
The operator, I called any numbers at random. I like 714, whatever. The lady answers his phone, and she goes, hello? And I said, hey, did you just watch Houston Rockets beat the Sixers? Yeah, don't you love our Rockets? And I went, I just screamed into the phone. I had a scream at a Houston Rockets fan because I watched their stupid faces cheering and yelling and screaming, and they're all happy.
A prank sports call. That's hilarious.
No. Just letting that person know. I had to talk to one of them.
All right. And now you don't even know what the NBA is anymore.
No, I don't.
Yeah.
Tracy
76ers
Taylor?
Are having a pretty good year.
Oh, good. How's Matisse doing?
Oh, yeah. I haven't heard as much about Matisse.
Okay. Look at you, Mr. Sports Guy. All right. Tracy.
Matisse Thybul update.
All right. A rose by any other name would smell as sweet, but how about a fish, Tom? The problem is, it's just that... What? What?
Before we get to that, I got a Matisse Thybul update.
Uh-oh.
He's just been named to the Australian national team, so if the Olympics actually go on in Tokyo, he will be a member of the Australian national team, along with his teammate Ben Simmons, also from the Philadelphia 76ers.
Why Australian? Why is he doing
that? Apparently, he has dual citizenship. He spent 7 years of his life
in
Australia.
When he's a kid, Elizabeth and Mr. T lived in Australia.
Yeah.
Oh.
Really smart.
Know.
Okay.
I guess he kept his citizenship.
Yeah.
I checked during the break. I called my brother, and he said, the new coach that's come in for the Sixers is not as big of a fan of Matisse. Matisse's shooting is not good. He's great when it comes to turnovers and great on defense, but doesn't materialize on the other side of the court, so he doesn't get the same sort of love from this new coach. But there you go. That's the update. By the way, Matisse Thybul, if anybody cares or knows, Eastside Catholic, and then went on to the UW, and then off to the 76ers. So that's where Tom and I
broke. First round draft
update,
pick.
Tom. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And
now
who taught him how to play? Who taught him how to play? Me.
You did.
I bought the basketball hoop.
Yeah.
I bought the basketball hoop on Craigslist and set it up at the bottom of the driveway, and he came across the street. All right. Carp, there's something about it. If you knew carp was on the menu, would you tend to avoid eating carp because people just think of carp as what?
as bottom feeders, that they're muddy, they're dirty, they're just not kind of like a high-end fish. And right now we have an invasion of Asian carp. We imported them to help with our algae problem because they eat a lot of algae. But now they're so plentiful that there's a danger of them overriding all sorts of other native fish. And so they're trying to figure out a way to market them. And they said they have a PR problem. They're actually a very kind of, they have a nice taste. They're a light, flaky fish that they think would be very responsive, that American eaters would be very responsive if they came up with a different word. They realized that carp is not something that's going to sell. And so they've apparently hired a PR a team, and they've come up. They're going to announce pretty soon what that new name is, and hopefully it'll have the same effect that it had on another fish that was renamed the Chilean sea bass, and now that's one of the...
That's a Patagonian toothfish.
Yes! And no one wanted a toothfish, but everybody wants a Chilean sea bass. And so now they're hoping they can do the same thing, turn around with carp. Good luck.
Yeah, because who wants a toothfish? Wait, did you see the word? Ever seen the word tooth on a menu anywhere?
Crunchy.
I believe it's a little extra calcium.
Yeah, there you go.
By the way, rockfish and the same thing. Rockfish turned into red snapper.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. All right. What do you got for us there, Tracy Taylor? What do you think?